The topic, it's interesting, though. The topic I wanted to discuss tonight, which I am going to discuss tonight because I want to, is the issue of genetic testing. The issue of genetic testing actually is, shall we say, some of a gateway issue to many other things. Under normal circumstances, we would follow up next week, but there is no next week. So next week will probably be in 2017. But we'll just start the issue right now. The question is as follows, that now, just to give some medical background, that science has progressed to the point where through genetic testing, you can find out whether a person has greater potential to have a certain disease. Probably the most notable of tests is the BRCA gene, that as it's there, there are two BRCA genes, BRCA1 and BRCA2. If somebody has BRCA BRCA2, they have an 80% chance of getting breast cancer by the time they turn 80. If you have BRCA1, there's a 60% chance. This is very recent information. I just found it out over dinner with someone who researches it. The BRCA gene, if someone has it, there's prophylactically things that you can do and perhaps should do in order to avoid getting the breast cancer. And the question is there an obligation for a person to test to see whether or not they have this gene? Now, in the event that the person does unfortunately have the gene, well, then we would probably strongly recommend that they do something about it. However, the question is whether the person doesn't want to know. And there are many reasons why a person wouldn't want to know. Right? For starters, it's not 100%. But the mental anguish will be 100% if you know that you have it. In the Jewish community in particular, there is a major reason why you don't want to know. Because if you don't want to know, because you don't want other people to know. In terms of shiduchim, having BRCA 1 or 2 positive will significantly hurt your chances, if you're single, of getting a shidduch, or your children's chances of getting a shidduch. Note that BRCA goes through men as well. Meaning that if a boy, his mother is BRCA positive, his daughters will have a much higher possibility of getting breast cancer. So the question is, if I do test, so maybe yes, maybe no, but if I am positive, for sure I have problems. If I don't test, I'll deal with whatever I have to deal with when I have to deal with it. However, obviously, as we will discuss, there is a positive mitzvah to take care of your health. And a person who does this test and finds out that they're BRCA positive will, in fact, have a better chance of survival because that there are certain drugs they can take beforehand, there's certain surgical procedures that they can consider having, than someone who does not test and perhaps doesn't find out until it's too late. Yes? Not at all. Interesting piece of information I found out. A BRCA test in the United States costs $5,000 approximately. There's one company that does it and has a patent. In Israel, a BRCA test costs $100. Yet another reason to make Aliyah. But even not to make Aliyah. Okay, it pays, fly to Israel to get the test and to spend the night in the King David and then come back. You're still saved half the money with that probably. Right? So that is the major reason it's not part of Dar Yisharim. Now also there's another reason why it's not part of Dar Yisharim, which we will discuss later on. BRCA is very different than Tay-Sachs. Tay-Sachs is a recessive gene. So therefore, if somebody is a Tay-Sachs carrier, it doesn't matter unless your partner is also a carrier. With BRCA, that's not true. It's not recessive. And therefore, in terms of shidduchim, there's no matching to be done. So even if it was financially viable, still, it would probably not be appropriate for it to be testing as part of the Dar Yisharim.
Dar Yisharim doesn't tell you what you have if you don't have it.
What?
They don't tell you.
Right, so we're going to discuss if anyone wants to cheat. Number 15 is Dar Yisharim.
Yeah.
So don't worry about it. I used it from the key source, of course, for all information. That's the Wikipedia article. So that is what we're going to focus on tonight, this idea of genetic testing. Now, of course, genetic testing, as I said, is really a gateway discussion towards genetic engineering and the like, which we will not be covering at this point. Let's start with the very beginning. In order to, obviously, unless there is an obligation for a person to take care of their health, there is no obligation to get this test, right? This test is based on the fact that somebody has to take care of their health. We actually discussed this in one of the Parsha Shiurim last year. That's before we started having egg rolls. Not as many people were there. And it says in Parshas Veschanan, coming up soon enough, Raki shomecho shmor nafshecho ma'od. Pentishkach es hadavor mesheru einechu pen yosu milvavecha. Kol yimechayech vodan l'ruvanech v'nevnecha. Be very careful and guard your soul not to forget the Torah, basically. And then it goes on and says, Yom asher amato lefnei Hashem elokecha b'chorev, etc. Remember that you're at Har Sinai. And then that ends off by saying, v'nishmartem ma'od l'nafsho seichem. Be very careful in guarding your soul. This is my pacemaker. Because that, in fact, he says, because, be very careful, because you didn't see a tmuna, it wasn't a picture, you actually saw God. The simple reading of these psukim, actually, we discussed last year, talks about the fact that you have to be very careful in keeping the Torah. However, the Gemara in Brachos does not understand it that way. The Gemara in Brachos understands it that it means that a person nishmartim lo'od l'nafsho seichem, a person has to be scrupulous in looking after their soul. Gemara tells us a story. Tanu Rabbanim Maisa b'chassid echad shehoya mispalo b'derech. There once was a chassid, what wasn't actually what we call a chassid, who was davening on the road. So Milshman Esrei, a government official, wished him shalom, and the guy's Milshman Esrei didn't respond. So the guy waited till he finished the Shmon Esrei. Doesn't it say in the Torah you're supposed to watch your soul? Why'd you respond to me? And if I would decide to chop off your head for that, no one would have bothered me. Not for the sake of your life, you don't say hello back.
Wait a minute, this is a Jewish guy.
No.
No,
this is a non-Jewish guy quoting the Torah to him. Okay. Right? That was commented on. So, Armelo, Hamtein li Ashe Afais Chavidarim. He says, before you give me a second to explain. Armelo, Ilo Yisa Omer Lefne Melch Basar Vedam. Uvach Averch Vesan Chashom. Hayisa Mach Zero? If you were talking to the king and your friend said, hey, how you doing? Would you say, I'm doing fine? No, you're in front of the king. Amaro Rav. What if you're talking to the king and then you start talking to this other guy? Amaro, he's a chokri masroshi besayf. They were chopped off my head. Amaro, v'odvarim kal v'chomer. Ma ato she yisa omer lefnei melech basa v'chadam shayom kan v'machar bekever. You who are standing in front of the king that today's alive and tomorrow's going to be in the grave. Kach anish yita omer lefnei melech melechem rochim akodesh baruchu. I was standing in front of the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings, who lives forever. How much more so? He says, you got a good point. So they said, okay, you got a point. So the understanding of the Gemara is means you have to be careful not to put your life in danger. Now, one could argue, well, who made that drasha? Right, the non-Jewish official.
But the guy seemed to take it.
Right. On the other hand, the guy didn't say, no, you have wrong pshat in the pasuk. No. Come. Let me teach you a little chumash. It could also be that maybe this was a better tact. Right? It could be that in terms of if he wants to keep your head on your shoulders, this might have been a better approach, even though. But the bottom line is that we paskin that a person does have a positive obligation to protect their health. The Rambam, interestingly, quotes this in two different places with an interesting difference. The first one is he discusses in the Rambam, if you look at the Hilchos Rotzeach Ushmiras HaNefesh, so the rules are said, the rules that you're not allowed to kill people and that you have to watch out for your own life. So he talks about the rules of Ma'akeh. What's Ma'akeh?
Fence on your
roof. You have to put a fence on your roof, because if one day someone will come and fix your roof, it's very theoretical. In that case, you have to make sure
they spend a lot of time on the roof.
Up on the roof.
Yeah.
So the
place for picnic.
Right. So the Rambam says
it's hypothetical.
It's the Lord. The landlord. the Rambam comments that when we talk about the fact that you have to put a fence on the roof, you know, that in case, God forbid, someone's saying Shiva, guy shouldn't come crashing in through the window. It's such a, you wouldn't want something like that to happen now, would you? And so this isn't just a matter of a roof. Says Echad Hagag, Echad Kol Davar Sheyesh Bo Sakana. The roof, anything that's dangerous, V'roi Sheyechshol Bo Adam V'Yamus, that somebody could accidentally get killed. Kigon Shehoysol Be'er, guy has a well, or bor is a pit b'chatzero. Vein Sheyesh Remayim, Vein Sheyim. It doesn't matter if there's water or not. Chayv Rasos Behem Chuya Gavo Asar Tzvachim. You have to have a fence around it that's at least 3 feet high. Or cover it. You got to be careful that people don't get hurt. Any type of sakana you have there, it is a positive commandment to be careful and make sure nothing happens. As it says, as it says, he's talking. You got to watch your life. And if you do this, bittul mitzvahs aseh va'avra rotosim damim. So he seems to say that this is a positive commandment. The Rambam similarly. So again, so there are two different. There's positive commandments and there's negative commandments in the Torah. There are many differences between the most obvious one being ones are positive and ones are negative, but. Beyond that, another difference is you get punished for violating a negative commandment. You don't get punished for violating a positive commandment. If I go to Park Burger and I have a burger, I get malchus. If I don't put on my tzitzis, I don't get malchus. If I don't make kiddush on Shabbos, I don't get malchus. They're all mitzvahs d'oraisa. They're all biblical commandments. But on a positive commandment, by and large, almost always, you're not going to get a punishment. It's just called the bittul aseh. You fail to do the positive commandment. However, on a negative commandment, there will oftentimes be a punishment. So, if I asked you, if someone does not put a fence on their roof, or someone fails to cover their pit, would they get malchus for that? Why not? Why do you say it's positive? Because it's the Rambam says, bittul mitzvahs aseh. He says, because the person violated a positive commandment. Right? However, if you look at Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, he says, a makalo atzmo loke, kamosha makilo lachem. If I curse myself, I get less results as if I cursed someone else. Shenemar hishom lecho shmar nafshecha. Quotes the same pasuk.
Wait a minute, let's. There's a leap here that you get malchus for cursing somebody else. Why does that happen?
Oh, so again,
because there's a lav, do not curse another person.
Right. So yeah, but he says
is
that
there a lav saying don't curse yourself.
Well, he said what the lav is. Yishomer lecho shmor nafshecha. The same pasuk he uses by Makkah. So what he's saying is as follows: the reason you get malchus for cursing somebody is because it's the same as punching him in the nose. So too, if you punch yourself in the nose, he's saying. So there seems to be a steer in the Rambam here. On the one hand, the Rambam seems to say that Tishomer Lecha is a mitzvah's asay, and the other hand, he says mitzvah's los asay. So, how do you live with that? So the Shulchan Aruch manages to play it kind of both ways, and says, Chen kol mechshav sheyesh bo sakodos nefashos, mitzvah's asay rehasiro, v'yishomer men rizor b'dover yafeh. In the event, quotes like the first Rambam, there's a mitzvah's asay to be proactive in making sure nothing goes wrong. Shinam Rishon Mechor Shmor Nafshecha. V'imlo hisir, v'iniach mershalos ha-mayvin li-dei sakana. Right? It says, if you do that, and you left it there, bito mitzvah's asay b'lo tosim damim. So he says, not only you're not mevatel the asay, but also, there seems to be this lo tosim damim. So the Marcheshes in the Tshuva spells it out a little bit more. And he says, people are bothered. What's going on with the Rambam here? Is it an assay? Is it a los assay? What is it? Masha Toma Dasa Rambam. Hilchos would say, the Yishomer assay, who gemar the Shavuot, the Dvar of Zal Asmo, but Hilchos Sanhedrin, Yishomer Lav, Lefi Anias Daiti, Poshid Hu Kamo Da Aminan Be'erevin, Yishomer Da Assay, Yishomer Da Lav. Says it's both. Im Kein Hilchos Rotzeach, Shemuchuiv Ra Hasir Mechsholos, Shehu Bekum Va'asei. He says there's really two parts of it. One is I have to proactively, before I get involved, I have to do something to make sure nothing goes wrong. That is a positive commandment. He seems to say as follows. In the event that I have a positive commandment to make sure you don't get hurt. If I don't do it and then you get hurt, so the getting hurt is the lo sase. So what are we saying here? So we're saying two things. We're saying that when it comes to the mitzvah of to guard your health, that would seem to at least have a positive aspect to it. And hishomer lecha, if it's positive, means that you have to do it beforehand. So based on this, it would seem that not only is there something wrong with me doing something actively that could potentially hurt my health, right? Smoking, right? That I'm violating this by smoking. Because smoking has been proven could potentially lead to many problems.
Most of the place can use the possibility of the Nishmartim
rather than Ashutay. So last year, that's what we discussed. We spoke, we talked about smoking, we spoke about marijuana, we spoke about skiing. Those were good times. But we're done with that now. And now we're moving on. Right? Now the question is, forget about those things that I can't actively do it. The question that I can't do anything, can I passively sit back and let something go wrong with my health? Not get my polio shot. Right? That's obviously vaccines turn on this.
Right.
For things where you apply this proactive to things that protect other people, is if you're over on those, isn't it a demon Zika?
Right. So you're saying if I don't vaccinate my kid, and then there's another kid in the class who got a vaccine but it didn't work on them, and now that kid gets measles for my kid, can they sue? Yeah, I'd say that they got a reasonable shot at that one. It's not a slam dunk, but it's probably worth it.
Fall off the roof that doesn't have the...
Right, obviously, right. But just to apply that. So, yes.
Is there any distinction going between this on the macro or...
Well, again, we're talking about this specific mitzvah. Hisham ochor od v'nafsho seichem. Right? That we're saying that in this mitzvah that you have to guard your health, since it's a mitzvah's asay, you have to be proactive in it.
But you don't get makos for mitzvah asay.
Not doing it.
By not doing it. But the thing is, since it's different from not protecting your fellow man.
Well, again, we're talking about protecting yourself here. Right? That's the fellow we're talking about. And we're saying here that the assumption is that when we said there's also an ase in it, right? Just like when it comes to the ase, that I have to put a makya. I have to do it before the guy falls off the roof. Right? Doesn't work the afterwards. Right? Right? So too, I have to actively take care of my health. Right? If my doctor gives me instructions and says, you know, right now you're okay. But if you don't cut down on your sugar, or you don't, you're gonna have diabetes problems. You don't cut down on your salt, you're gonna have a high blood pressure issue, right? So it would seem here that the mitzvah is that even though let's say right now I'm only pre-diabetic, there is an obligation to treat it right now. And similarly, it would seem that if I could get a vaccine, and that vaccine could stop me from getting polio, or measles, mumps, rubella, or chicken pox, or anything else, it would seem that assuming that medically it makes sense, I arguably would be obligated to do it for myself. Forget about all the other kids in the class.
What's the Marchesh saying again? I don't understand.
The Marchesh is explaining the difference between the ase and the los ase. Is the ase is what you do beforehand, and the los ase is what you're over if you didn't do it and someone gets hurt. Right, but you see here that the assay obligates you to do something beforehand.
So does that mean it's actually two separate mitzvahs?
What?
Is it two separate mitzvahs?
I mean, arguably, yes. The question is, I'm not sure what it makes a difference for.
The same coin.
One is the consequence of the other.
Right. It's interesting because when you count you want to know for the counting of the 613, does this count as one or two? There are a lot of times where the same action has a positive and a negative. So, for example, you have to let your land rest during Shemitah, and you're not allowed to work it. Resting is a positive commandment; not working it is a negative commandment. So, two sides of the same coin. Does it count? That's a discussion. But as far as work is, it's not really. It doesn't make much of a difference at the end of the day.
So, by Makal Atzma means that. So, Hisham Lacha is telling you don't curse.
Right, right. Makal Atzma. That is the Nezek. The klal we're assuming is the nezek.
So then it should be.
That's why it's a lav. Not putting up the makah is an ase because that's beforehand.
Right, it's not benishmarta.
Right.
Right.
Correct. In the event that I don't do what I'm supposed to do, and now chas v'sholom, the person develops diabetes or high blood pressure, and they have a stroke, God forbid, or they have renal failure, that's the lav. Right. Besides all your tzaras and you're over an avera. Right? They're literally adding insult to injury. So that's what we're saying. So it seems from here that there is a positive. And so in the event that I could undergo a test, and the test could either protect me potentially from a medical issue, or it would give me a much better chance to deal with it, right? Then it would seem that you are obligated. The other side of the coin a little bit is a concept called Shomer Pesayim Hashem, right? Literally, God protects the fools, right? The Gemara is an interesting Gemara in Shabbos, which raises this. It talks about what's a good day for bloodletting. So it says, Porsa Dedama, Chad B'Shapsa, Arba Umali Shapsa. You should do it either Sunday, Wednesday, or on Friday, Erev Shabbos. Avalo Sheniya Chamishi. Never, never do bloodletting on Mondays and Wednesdays.
He gets too nervous.
Right, the long tachan and whatever, the laning. Right? Right? You have cotton, there's just too much going on Mondays and Thursdays. So, Damer Ma Mishi Yeshua Zuchus Avis Yakis Dan Bisheni Vachamishi. So, only if you have Zuchus Avis, then you can do it on Mondays and Thursdays. It's like concierge day. Only people with Zuchus Avis are allowed in. Shebezdin Shalmala Vishalmata Shovin Ke'echad. Because the Bezdin up high is open the same day as the Bezdin down low. The Bezdin down low is open on Mondays and Thursdays, so therefore they're open on high Mondays and Thursdays. So therefore they're doing din. So you don't want to be, you know, draining your blood at the time they're doing din. That's what it says. So he said, okay, that's fine. It says, Ubatros b'Shabbos by time alone. So the question is, well, what we said Sundays, Wednesdays, Fridays, yes. Mondays, Thursdays, no. What about Tuesdays? It's a short shir shal yom also. We seem to be a great day. Because that's something it has to do with the astrology. So Nami, Mali, the Shasta Nami, because Friday's the same thing. Really, you're right. Really, it is dangerous to do bloodletting on Fridays. But since everyone's already doing it, God will watch out for the fools. So wait a second. What does this mean, God will watch out for the fools?
If you know the halacha and you know the way you should do it, then it's your responsibility. But if you're a fool and you don't know...
So you're saying ignorance is bliss.
It may not be bliss.
Ignorance
God,
of the law...
Because, you know, he didn't learn that. He was sick that day in Shir. And he didn't go. So I'm going to give him a break here.
So why don't we say that for Mondays and Thursdays also?
Well, if he doesn't know. But now you just told us.
But I told you Tuesday also. I told you Friday also. Right? On Tuesday he knows about Mars, but on Friday he doesn't know about Mars.
Nobody pays attention to Friday. That's
why Shurim Pesach Hashem. Right. So, that, it's, right. So that's a little bit of a strange concept.
You want to use this as an argument why you don't have to spend $5,000 on genetic testing for Rambo?
Right. One could perhaps argue, one could argue that Shurim Pesach Hashem. Shurim Pesach
Hashem. We should be fools.
It works. I'd rather be a fool that God watches out for than a genius that no one's looking out for. You know, given the choices out there, you know, I would think. So it's interesting. So my wife got very riled up about this one time. We were in Pesach in a hotel, and a certain person came over, a rabbi, a person who, you know, was not in the greatest of shapes. He was in a large shape. And the guy says that he knows from a certain gadol that you're not supposed to go to doctors. You don't go to doctors because, you know, God watches out for the fools. So as long as you don't know, you're okay. Right? So yeah, if I go to the doctor and the doctor tells me I have high blood pressure, I have to do something about it. But don't ask, don't tell. Right? Sharm Psalm Hashem. I think Obamacare is built on that. That's the basic yisod of Obamacare. How we keep prices down. So what does this mean? Shom Yisrael Hashem, right? Can you really apply that to this? Whatever. So let's say I am a Tay-Sachs carrier, and so is my wife. But Shom Yisrael Hashem, why bother testing? Better I should have known that HaKadosh Baruch would take care of it. So,
don't you have to do Ishtar? I mean, if you just sit back and watch it happen, you know, I'm going to stand on the same track.
Well, there's certain things you just can't control. You know, we do Hashtadlis, but at the end of the day, you know, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who takes care of.
I mean, the cases are different cases also.
Okay, let's say.
The first case is the case of the actual danger. You know, this is the case of.
Which is the first case, which is the second case? Torah tells you have to. I can't say sure somewhere where Torah tells me I have to do that. Okay, but so Tay sucks also. You know, 75. If me and my wife would, God forbid, both be carriers, three out of four, my kids would not have the disease.
This is not an obvious. This is not a for sure case where someone will get hurt or injured. Or maybe it's better not to bloodlet on these days.
Okay, but let's apply it to Tay-Sachs, apply it to BRCA. What would you say? Is it like the roof, or is it like bloodletting?
You're saying it's 60% or whatever the percentage is.
Right. You got even. Let's take a look at Tay-Sachs. Right, 1 in 30 are carriers. Right, which means 1 in 900 couples are both carriers, and even in those cases, 3 out of 4 are not going to have it. Right. 2 out of 4 will be carriers. One will be clear, 100%. And the last one. So again, we're talking about the odds of this being is 1 in 3,600. That's the odds. The odds of if without testing anything, any kid being born with Tay-Sachs would be 1 in 3.
Where you apply Shom Yisrael
Hashem. Oh, so that's the question. Can I? So again, if I apply Shom Yisrael Hashem, that means I don't have to test for Tay-Sachs.
But
Shom
Yisrael
is a very different case.
Shom Yisrael Hashem is a guy that can.
How can you apply Shom Yisrael Hashem if you know
Right. Exactly. I mean,
if I know what?
You know, back in the days
before we could test it, we only had one thing to rely upon.
Astrology.
Sure.
But now you know.
So let me ask,
Why is that?
Just
smoking?
Because you don't know.
You do know. Smoking is dangerous to your health.
And yet he still says, hey, when I was growing up, that was fashionable, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Again, not only that,
before he came out of the world.
And before Alex was growing up, there were doctors who said it was good for you.
My father was shown had asthma, and the doctor in Poland told him to smoke menthol cigarettes. I said to him, why menthol?
Not even that long ago. 25 years ago in France, they were selling cigarettes, and on the label it said, cigarettes anti-asthmatique.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so right. Just 25, 30 years ago.
So that's where you have Shomer Psalm Hashem. You don't
know. There are
the times
of
Ramayisha.
Now you know that
you know that there's Tay-Sachs in your family or whatever. You know you might be a carrier. You want to make sure not to have a baby with another carrier, or four babies at least.
Okay, but a mathematician. So let me ask you this question. But would you say, what if I don't know? Should everyone be tested for Tay-Sachs, or only people that have reason to suspect?
You can't suspect it.
It's like my safer on manga safer on Sota. I'm calling you what to suspect when you're suspecting. Right. So that's the question. Obviously, this concept of Shomer Psalm Hashem, we have to come up with some sort of geder, shall we say, some sort of parameters that will give us an idea whether it's applicable.
I mean, it's not exactly without pejorative implications, right? I am not going to get tested because I'm an idiot. That's what it's saying.
Show up for something.
Okay, you know what?
Why are you doing it?
Maybe not you, but I've been called worse myself. Recently. So I have a list. So the question is this concept of Shomer Psalm Hashem, can it be fairly be applied to our case here? So the Ritva talks about again, and there's another case in Yevamos of Shomer Psalm Hashem. Says follows: Lofum haytama mandalo boy lemimo biyoma de'eva. So the Gemara says as follows: the Gemara is talking about that you shouldn't do brisim on cloudy days. What? And in fact, that is the reason. In San Diego, you can always do a bris. In Seattle, never. So in fact, this is what? What? So the Gemara wants to know the. So again, we have a tradition. It says it in Rashi and Chumash, right? That for 40 years in the desert, they weren't doing bris milah. What was the sakana? It was no shevis, right? Constantly. So it says because the nonair cover was always cloudy. So he said, aye, but nowadays we do it when it's cloudy. Shomer Psalm Hashem. So what does this mean, Shomer Psalm Hashem?
Where is this idea that the
nonair cover
was the reason that
it's the Gemara in
Yevamos. It's not the ruach.
It's right. So again, it's a discussion there.
You think that would prevent sakana?
What?
The reason they do bris is because they didn't have tachanun. So what was the sense?
Strikes again. He doesn't even know he's got a tremor. You don't want a blind moyo if it's that cloudy.
That's why we have, yes. You know, in the doors now, it's signs, or 1 or 2 or 3, yeah. We have the braille.
In braille.
That's going to be a story.
The elevator for sure. That's where I'm going.
To the building code, have to put it on the OR door. You want to put it
right. Us lawyers support blind justice. The Ritva says, "Lofum haytaima mandalo boy le mimel biyoma de'eva rishus biyado." So Taka, if you don't want to give your son a bris because it's cloudy outside, that's fine. V'shapu avid, shelo lismach al shomer psalim Hashem. Don't rely on it. Right? V'hu adit shayir roi shelo limo b'shav shu yom unan. Not only that, but if it's Shmini Ramila, even if it's Shabbos, don't talk to Shabbos. Taka. So the Ritva seems to have a very broad understanding of what's shomer psalim Hashem. Truth of the matter, people don't usually have such a broad understanding. Yesh Rahavin. So look at the Torah's Chesed we start with. Who says, Yesh Rahavin, Taima de Rabbanan de Ka'ami Khan, Min Asherayin Rachman, Mishum Shinem, Ashoim Psoim Hashem, Mashro Aminan, Kain Bechol Sovik Nefashos Ta'am, the Kama de Docha, Kolisur de Reisa. Wait a second. If there's 1 in 1,000 chance that there's Sakana here, we allow you to violate Shabbos, we allow you to eat Treif. This is, we take this quite seriously, Sakana. And we can say, this guy can say, not scared. Wait a second. If it's, you can say, that doesn't sound so serious if you have a right to take a pass. On the other hand, we're Machal Shabbos. You have the person eat on Yom Kippur. It says, how are you going to vary out there? You won't do for Safek Sakana. How can you tell me, show me Pesachim Hashem, is this, all right, you know, unless you're a fool, then you can do whatever you want. So, ignorance, that's the greatest excuse for the law, right? So he says, when a guy turns around and says, you know, Nebuch, I'm bleeding, there's a long shot chance that you know, the person will bleed out on Shabbos, right? Yeah, Hashem, Hashem, Hashem. Let him wait. Right? The doctor says that he needs to take this medication on Yom Kippur. Yeah, Hashem, Hashem, Hashem. Trust me, I know this guy. He falls into the psalm. You know, the Torah doesn't make sense, this whole thing. Those who read this film with Rashi, Zal, the Ramei of Rabbanon, the Kan Azri, she taught in the Prigim, Chayshin, and Limiyuto, and Olam. So there's a machlokus out there. As whether we say chayshin and lemiyuta, if the majority is one way, do I care about the minority? The hinei, right? Al hada lo mal ba midbar. The fact they weren't giving bris meals in the midbar. Ibayis emo the lo nibdar anani kavod. Some people say it's because of the anone akavod. Amara papa hilchach yom de evil lo malinan. So papa says you don't give brisim on a cloudy day. He says, but nowadays people do it, so Sherib Psayim. So what does that mean? Pirish. He says, no. It's not that you're allowed to. That it's not a matter of, well, everyone's doing it, so what am I going to do? It's a matter of, no, everyone's doing it, and no one's dying, so it's not a problem. It's an empirical proof. It's not an excuse. Yeah, maybe it was. Nature changes. There's mutations. Right? What was true medically 1,000 years ago may not be true today. What's true today may not be true going down the line. Right? Things change. Right? Some people worry about malaria. Other people worry about sickle cell anemia. There are changes out there. So at one point this was very dangerous, but now I see everyone's giving a bris and nothing happens. I have empirical proof.
So that doesn't sound like you're a poshea.
What?
You're no fool. You're
Pessy. Pessy. Please.
Yeah.
Right. So he's saying, Shor Psoim Hashem means that these people, who are the Psoim? The people who did it beforehand. That Hashem had them survive. But nowadays, it doesn't matter anymore. So Shor Psoim Hashem isn't some sort of heter. Shor Psoim Hashem is that if medically I need to prove one way or the other, I can look at what's happening and I can take the empirical evidence and I can extrapolate from that. So in that case, this means nothing for us.
Well, if Hashem's protecting them, then they would be okay too.
No, again, the people before him, they did wrong. Right? Those people, before you knew that it was safe, you shouldn't have done it. But you know, to quote a great Jew, he told him not to drive, but he made it home alive. That only proves that he's insane. You may be right, you may be crazy. But that's what it comes down to. Right? So that's that guy, but nowadays, once everyone else has gone through it, it's okay, yes.
So does that mean that I never had brisim and this guy was born in 38 or 40 years later?
Correct. Which, if you open up the book of Joshua, it talks of the fact that Joshua had a mass bris milah when they crossed over the Jordan. And according to this, is because the last 40 years, pretty much no one's been doing it, except for Shevet Levi. You're okay.
So maybe they're just the fools that Hashem's watching over. I know that I'm not a fool,
but I'm talking. No, again, that again, there's empirical evidence that for whatever reason, this isn't the problem anymore. And therefore, they survived. I mean, they survived, but at this point, it's just not a problem. It wasn't that there were thousands of individuals who made it. It's a matter of that now that thousands of individuals have made it, clearly it wasn't the problem. At some point, it stopped being a problem. That's one approach. Rav Avadya in the Abiya Omer has a second approach. He quotes from the Zecher Yehosef. He says, "Initial gam came bezev because of those shaych omer deha inna the doshu beirav mishum pesam Hashem kahid the shabzi yavamus the chol han imidi to have mishum mitzvah by bechal shomer mitzvah or yada davara." He said the two cases that we've discussed have been the case of it's talking about the case of someone getting a bloodletting on erev Shabbos before Shabbos. Right, only Friday we applied it to, and getting a bris milah. So he said, in those cases, yes, there was potential downside of danger, but at the same time, there was upside of mitzvah. By doing the milah on the cloudy day, you got a milah. You got a milah bismano.
The question is if it's going to be stuck out of the flesh, it's not a mitzvah.
No, so he says, in those cases, the only time you can say Shem Hashem is if there's a mitzvah on the other side. Is it a positive reason not to do it? Then you can rely on Shem Hashem.
The kids joined us that you do the bris, so then you're a mekayim mitzvah.
You're an idiot.
Are you a mekayim mitzvah?
No. Hey, you're a mekayim mitzvah. Oh, yeah. The kid's not going to do a second bris afterwards. But they had injury to injury. Right? That you're not going to do. But you shouldn't have done it. So the second approach is that Shem Pesayim Hashem only applies in the case where there's a mitzvah, and as such, again, it would not play any role in our case here. There's no mitzvah not to take a genetic test. Rav Schechter has an approach as well, which I've always understood to be the most common approach, and that is that there's a limited amount of cases where I can say Shem Pesayim Hashem. Everything in life has a certain amount of danger. Crossing the street is dangerous. Driving in a car is dangerous. Driving in a car is more dangerous than flying in an airplane. However, people get much more nervous flying in an airplane than they do driving in a car. It's not logical. It's just the way it is. Right? There are certain things out there that are dangerous. Skydiving, bungee jumping, skiing. Hockey, skating, right? There's certain things out there. Where do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line and say, this is too dangerous, and this is not?
Does it matter when testing is? Meaning, you said clearly that which makes sense, is that not taking a test is not a, you're not stopping any mitzvah. But let's say someone's at a point where they're about to get married.
Mm-hmm. Awesome stuff.
And they didn't take the test.
Right.
Last second now.
What's the last second? She's about to become pregnant in 5 minutes? What's the last second?
Right before they get engaged or whatever.
That's not the last second.
Right before they get married.
It's still not. Okay. You're getting closer.
5 minutes before
you're
getting married.
Oh, that's within 300 seconds of the last second.
They're at the wedding.
Mazel tov.
Okay, good.
And doctor pulls out a syringe. What?
So in that case, maybe you are preventing a mitzvah. So is there any argument that, or is there saying?
What do you mean you're preventing a mitzvah?
Mitzvah to get married.
Right.
Again, there's a famous Talmudic dictum that says it's a lot of fish in the sea.
Right.
You know, if this was the last person in the world,
right. So
fine. Then it wouldn't make any sense to test.
Right. Okay.
You take your chances. So Rav Schechter says, what's the line? Where do you draw the line between, you know, obviously, even though it's dangerous, we get into cars and we drive places, right? And we also get into airplanes and fly places. So, but where is that line, right? Getting into the airplane is not a problem. Jumping out with a parachute, is that a problem? Jumping out without a parachute, bigger problem. that we'll agree on. So Rav Shachter says in number 11, V'dugma v'gimel chirukim hanal matzino inyan din safek pikuach nefesh. So this, let's look at a potential danger. The kaimel under lohochu pikuach nefesh achar harov. When it comes to pikuach nefesh, we don't follow majorities. Achein, ayin, pesri, tshuva, yriyaradeya, shehevi, b'tshuva, chasim, sovet, the safek sechosh shal echad, mine elef, sheshum odom lo yochush lozeh, lo mikri safek sakana. He says, if it's a 1 in 1,000 possibility and no one's concerned about it, that's not sakana. Yeah, so something could always go wrong. You get out of bed in the morning, that's dangerous. But people don't worry about that.
Case X is not a sakana.
What? Well, let's see. I don't know if I did the word elef, literally. So Maram Shik says, even 1 in 1,000,000. Elef alofim. Name of the bottle daito etzol das kobneo. The mekai gad the paskal achovitz chaim v'chazni yishadav v'tori b'daito. There's certain things that are dangerous, period. Right? The fact that I don't care, I like to go swimming with the piranhas. No, that's dangerous, right? Everyone agrees on that, you know? I'm nervous to go to shul because I might catch some disease. That's also not reasonable on the other end. Where do you draw the line? You draw the line on what makes you nervous.
It's in that each person has emotions.
Correct. Absolutely. Show me psoi mashem means if I'm not nervous, it's not a problem.
Not that this is a...
No, so he said, there are certain things that are clearly or dangerous whether I like it or not. Right? And there's certain that are clearly not dangerous, no matter how much of a nervous Nelly I am. Nothing against Nelly. Right? But the question... right? But, in between, where do you draw the line? That's what Shomer Pesayim HaShem is. What? Well, again, no, going on a plane, we said, empirically is not dangerous. Right, so it's empirically not dangerous.
Going on a Delta plane today was dangerous.
Right, no, because you weren't getting off the ground. It wasn't dangerous at all. It's the safest day to fly Delta. Right?
No, but so, let's, for argument's sake, say, a person, look, I don't know anyone who's like this, but I'm sure there are people out there who would say, forget any of the issues that might come my way, you know, even if I'm a carrier, my children are this way, whatever, I'll deal with it as it comes. Can we think that way?
We'll discuss that. Well, let's discuss it. Okay, this is the background. We've now officially finished the background. The background has been finished, and time is up. But we're going to go forward anyway. So the background is that there's a positive obligation to protect a person's health, A, and the use of Shomer Pesayim Hashem to avoid a test like this is really not appropriate. Right, it would seem that the majority of opinions, it just doesn't work. Therefore, and this is important to have the dates, in 1973, Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a tshuva to his beloved son-in-law, Rabbi Tendler, regarding Tay-Sachs. Hinei b'dvar yirodim shenodu shrofi ateva chaim zman k'tzar k'shnatayim v'shalos umesim hanikra Tay-Sachs. Said, regarding the children that are born and live maybe 2-3 years and then die, it's called Tay-Sachs. They sibazu. Right? It's only born when there are two parents, both of them have carriers, we would say. She'af she'in ze chisorin lohem ba'atzmem, even though being a carrier is nothing, not problematic for you personally. Ira she'noldem mehem yiladim ke'elu. But this can happen when they get together. And only one is if only one's a carrier, there's a 0% chance that the child's going to have the disease. The genetic marker was discovered for Tay-Sachs in 1969. So this is pretty early. So again, they discovered it then. I don't know at what point they produced the blood test, but clearly not that long afterwards. If you find out that you're a carrier, so you'll make sure to marry someone who's not a carrier. She's a carrier, she'll make sure he's not. Should they go out of their way to find out whether they're carriers or not? Translation, should they take the genetic test? Right? Who are we talking about? Anybody. Because anybody doesn't know. Should you do the test when they're little kids, as a baby maybe, would be appropriate, or should you wait until they're of marital age? Is this something that people should know about and people should not know about? Even though there's a very small amount, we said 1 in 3,600, and you might say, I go perfectly in God, God will take care. Don't look into the future. It's a very easy test to do. It's not that I'm looking into the future. I'm closing my eyes to not see what's in front of me. Besides the kid, you know what it is to be a parent of a child like this. Everyone should get tested, Rav Moshe Paskind. You should take out ads in newspapers and tell people. Go out and get tested. I will borrow Pasha to Tsarri also Dover Bitsina. Should do it privately. Shall Yeda Bacher Echa Mechavero. I shouldn't know if you're a carrier and you should know if I'm a carrier. No one should know this. Vigama Rofish Yasa Etzo Abdikal Yagal Shimap. Ish. This is before HIPAA. Doctors can't tell, even then shouldn't tell anybody. Just go tell the kid that's what you're supposed to do. So therefore, Rav Moshe writes clearly that a person should get tested for Tay-Sachs. However, it should be done privately and quietly.
This is exactly why Dura Sherman's, by the way. You have, when you call in...
15.
And I'm just saying...
15. We're only up to 13.
Getting to it.
15.
What?
What?
Is that
no biggie. Just give some blood.
Does that mean monetary as well?
Because we say that bracha.
Let's say it's the easiest test in the world. I can walk into any store. It takes 5 seconds, but it costs $100,000. So again, I consider it still open call.
So I don't know, but again, that's not what he's talking about here, right? Right, the Tay-Sachs test is
right,
even in America cheaper than what the bracha test is in Israel.
So I'm saying it's open call just.
I don't know. Again, I would assume that if it was unduly expensive, that would be a reason not to do it as well. Right? Again, doctors could argue the value. Right. At the same time, in 1972, Rav Breich was a pretty young guy at the time, I would imagine. Right? He wrote an article on it in the Ora Mizrach, where he again came out very strongly that you have to do it. The only difference that he said is he said he was encouraging people to do it publicly. That this should become known. That there shouldn't be a stigma. He thought by publicly going to the yeshivas and testing everybody, it would be much more successful than privately encouraging people one at a time to do it. Again, this is talking about the 70s. Now he says you have to be aware what's going to happen. Breich says, if you find out that it's a Tay-Sachs baby, at least in the 70s, you wouldn't know till the fourth, fifth month. If you don't fall out to the fourth, fifth month, you can't do an abortion halachically. And therefore, you're going to have to go to term knowing what's going on here. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing that you can do to make the child's life, give the child any chance of surviving. Therefore, he says, we could basically knock it out by doing this on a massive scale. There will be no more Tay-Sachs babies in the Jewish community. In fact, I will note as of today in Israel, the ultra-Orthodox community has zero Tay-Sachs babies because they en masse get tested and make sure this doesn't happen. So,
but they don't know what the issue is doing it, you know, if it's done in the yeshiva or something like that. Even though it's not done in a snuotic situation, but you're not being mefarsim to anybody else.
Right. No one's saying that you should be mefarsim what you got.
So what did Ramesh have against that?
So again, the concern is as follows, and it's very similar to what we said about Bracha. Meaning that when it comes to Tesach, I know, you know, that being a carrier really doesn't mean much, assuming you're smart. Now, in the event that I am in a situation of, my daughter is the best girl out there. She can marry whoever she wants. So I've got resumes from today till tomorrow. So I find out that a guy is a Tay-Sax carrier. So what does that mean? Even if I come, that means...
Blemish on a Zifa suddenly.
That means... I'll be smarter about it. That means half of my grandchildren will be carriers as well.
Misha is advocating against people being the Farsin that they are carriers?
No, again, so they... Right, so but the idea being that Misha wants to do it in a way that it shouldn't be a pagam. Now, of course, as we said, in the event that people don't understand, then that leads to this.
But he's not saying that you should be mefarsim. He's not saying you should be.
Pikuach nefesh is important.
Yeah, says, do be mefarsim.
Right. No, but being mefarsim, just do the testing and appear in a public setting.
So it's interesting. I like to tell the following story. I hope Willig doesn't mind, because here it comes. As follows, Rabbi Willig, Baruch Hashem, he has several children. Among his children, he has daughters. So he has more than two children. So because he has more than two children, he had the following cheshbon. He said, instead of having all my kids go out and do Dar Yisharim, which is chavola several times over, I'll take a test flat out. My wife will take a test flat out. If neither of us are carriers, my kids aren't carriers, I can save all of them from doing it. So they tested, and Taka the Willigs, neither of them are carriers. And therefore, he told the children, no, you don't got to do Dar Yisharim, because you can marry whoever you want. Whoever you marry, you're not going to have a problem. One of his daughters couldn't get dates, because without a Dar Yisharim number, no one would go out with her. He said, but we don't need one, we're better.
They don't know.
Rabbi Willig said, it's chitzarech, go get a Dar Yisharim number. What? Right? Baruch Hashem, she's married, she has children. Nice fella. But, right, so again, these concerns, you know, you shouldn't make light of them. Right? The Olam is a Golem. Okay, but the Olam is a Golem. Shem v'pesayim Hashem. There's no shortage of people who fall into the category of passing. There's an interesting tshuva of the Tzitz Eliezer, where he makes two points. Point number one, we won't read it inside, but he points out that he is matir to do an abortion on a Tesach baby up until the seventh month. Tzitz Eliezer. Goes through. So that's major. However, despite that, we'll reread the end of it. He says, Hashera nosefesh. He says, Fashodati who he mishanis vahu. Im zug tzair ham omid reschate magalu bebedikos dam. As he says, in the event a couple didn't get tested, and now she's pregnant, and the baby has, Amnio says that it has Tay Sachs, she's Mekel. He says, but don't think for a second that means that I want you to put yourself in this situation. In the event that you know you're both carriers, don't say, okay, we'll get pregnant, and we'll abort the ones that are problematic.
You're not allowed to do that.
So he says, what should I do? So he said, let's say they come over, they say we're both carried. Kate's on the top of them. Mishpacha. So maybe they say we just won't have children. But daiti less din tzarech boshesh. You don't got to think about this. They can't get married and not have children. He has to have children. Even if this is what it means. And adopting isn't enough. They make the guy get divorced over this.
Because
He said, either what? He said, you can't do it. He says, bottom line, he said, and what do you tell them in this case? In the event they're both carriers, you tell them, I'm sorry. Break it up. Break it up and find someone else.
Say, in other cases where it's not predictable and you know that the fetus has a horrible disease, he allows late-term abortion?
Yes, he does. He's a very much a minority opinion.
Down syndrome or things like that.
He talks about, he has a tshuva, if you want to read up, about doing an amnio for a woman above the age of 37, checking for a potential mongoloid.
So he says they could have a...
So in there he has, I don't know so much, but again, he has a few tshuvas on the topic. But that's the key here, is that now it's interesting, as a rabbi, this is, of course, is the disaster. You get, particularly with older singles, right, they're mid-30s, they've been dating for different people for the last 10, 15 years.
Finally, they find somebody.
So what do you tell them? Do you tell them roll the dice? You tell them guess not, try again? So the truth of the matter is, nowadays, a rabbi who knows will tell them PIGD. Now what you do is as follows. You get married. You have children through IVF. You make embryos. You take the embryos and you test them beforehand. In the event that the embryo is a Tay-Sachs baby, you get rid of it. Not only that, even if it's a carrier, get rid of it. You can test before you implant, find that these are absolutely clean, and then implant. It's expensive. It's tough, right? This is not something you want to do with chachila. But if that's what it is, it's a lot better than the other options. Right, so that's why it's particularly important for a rabbi to be on top of these things, because in a situation, science changes, and with science changing, you have different options, and if you have different options, the advice psakic can be very different. I wanted to end off here by this.
You would advise them not to do the Rishon, or if they did the Rishon, it came out as
a... No, again, this is once it's a match. Oh. Once it's a match, right? Maybe it's not a match. I mean, once
they like each other is because they have
so much in common.
genetic component in common.
Oh, we finally figured out what love is based on. Commonalities, shared commonalities. In 1983, Dor Yesharim started. Dor Yesharim was started by a Hasidic Yid who Nebuch lost four children to Tay-Sachs, and wanted to do something to stop it. And he understood, so they came up with the following plan. What happens in Dor Yesharim, if whoever's not familiar, is as follows. A young person goes and they take a test, and they look for several diseases, right? The current list is Tay-Sachs, together with several other ones. You can see them here in the third paragraph, Lesh-9. What they're looking for. What?
Lesh-9 disease.
It says over here. Let's see. Yeah, you have the list in front of you.
Third paragraph.
Right. Cystic fibrosis, Canavans, Fanconi anemia, etc. What they do is they don't tell you whether you're a carrier or not, but you just get a number. When you go out with a girl, before you go out, either you give the shachin your number, not that type of number, you give them the Dor Yesharim number, and you take her number, and you call them up. And they'll say date or no date. Unless they're both carriers, they'll say date. And they'll go and they'll get married. One could be a carrier and no one will ever know. Not the person who married them, not the person themselves. The idea being here that this way there's no stigma, etc. And a person can then go and make sure that their children, even if they're a carrier, whether they knew it or not, would not have any risk of having Tay-Sachs or these other diseases. Right, so the recommendation is not to do that. I'll tell you one or two stories. I was tested when I was in YU, long before I was dating. And I was curious about it. So me and my roommate, we called in with our numbers. And they said, we got good news and bad news. No, Eddie Silver. I mean, Eddie. It's funny because they said you're supposed to put the number someplace where you're not going to lose it. So I put it on the refrigerator in the dorm, which we left over the summer. And then, like 5 years later, I had to call up Eddie. I said, Eddie, I'm going out seriously. Do you know where the fridge is? That's A. B, my wife did not have a Dor Yesharim number. So when it came to the point, we had two choices. Either she would go get a Dor Yesharim number, or one of us would just go get a test to see if that, and if the one of us wasn't the carrier, it wouldn't be a problem. Ish chayal mi'imsa. Where do you find an army man? I took a second test. Well, you'll have to know that I am not a carrier. I cannot talk for your mother. So that's the story. This is the idea. It's a wonderful idea. It's interesting. I put down here that they even say that there is disagreement. Interesting. There has been criticism leveled against the method used by Dor Yesharim by Rabbi Moshe David Tendler, the professor of medical ethics at Yeshiva University. The question arises, when do you stop? There are close to 90 genes you wouldn't want to have. Will this lead to people showing each other computer printouts of their genetic conditions? You'll never get married. Field system is affirming eugenics, which he sees as the idea that Jews are a repository of bad genes. I think that's ridiculous. I really do. I think you're not going to need a printout if there's 90 different diseases that can be avoided through this. Ma tov u'manoyim. I think that would be wonderful.
It's interesting, although they don't tell you the others. They always tell you to have the other side called in as well. They want
to
be confirmed. Meaning when I was dating Rachel, when we called in, they said have her call in as well.
Interesting.
But that's their thing.
I guess they wondered why she'd want to date you. Wanted to talk her out of it. I don't know. There's this guy calls on a weekly basis, you know.
But I think it has to do with privacy issues.
But, right. So anyhow, I understand
that they want each side to call.
Yeah, I can't tell you I understand it, but I'm glad it seems to have worked out.
It's funny because it's certainly not a positive
thing. What? Again, the idea it's secret is because it's a stigma issue. It's not a medical reason. It's a psychological reason.
I don't want my children to be potential carriers.
Now, while I think this is a fair dealing with the Tay-Sachs issue, this does not answer a lot of questions about BRCA. BRCA is different for many reasons. Right? BRCA, it's not a matter of my avoiding children, it's me. Right? It's very different. And the question is, there's a lot to be said. You know, how much can you really do about it? Right? There is real downside potential to it in terms of psychological, etc. You know, should we be mass testing BRCA? It's interesting. So I mentioned that in Israel, testing is much cheaper than in America, and there is a push, I found out this tonight also, that the government should provide free testing for all Ashkenazi women. Sephardi women do not have a greater, if you're Ashkenazi, you have a 40 times greater chance of having BRCA than the general public. If you're a Sephardi, you have the same chance as a Chinese woman. Right, you could, but you know, there's no reason whatsoever. So what's interesting is they said, okay, you know, how many Ashkenazi women? So the government said, no. If we say we're providing this for Ashkenazi and not for Sephardim, we're going to have riots in the street. Shas is going to drop out of the government. Right. The fact that it makes no sense is nothing. If we provide it, it has to be for everyone. Politically, it can't be one way or the other. Right, so the question is, assuming that they're providing it for everyone in Israel, can you force a person to do it? And saying that halachically you have to do it, it's not as easy. I might recommend it, but say that it's the same halachic slam dunk as
there
this.
There are prophylactics for it, so then
there are, you know, again, a radical double mastectomy works in 98% of the cases. But you know that's a much bigger deal than don't date that person.
And it comes to other cancers too, not just breast cancer.
Right. So you know, you can take certain pills that'll cut your the risk in half. Perhaps you know there are things you can do. It's not as simple at this point. But in terms of Dor Yesharim, in terms of testing, taste for Tay-Sachs, it makes all the sense in the world. And one could make a strong argument that there's a halachic imperative, right? But for bracha, I would not yet go that far at this point.
Would you say in the age case, I get it with the older people, you could tell them that. Let's say someone's younger, 20 through 24, and they just decide they love this person, they don't care what the results are.
So again, if the person's going to get... I would say, okay, you know, but I would strongly recommend they only have children through IVF,
right.
Which halachically isn't the easiest thing, but I would tell them that that's what you have to do.
So age doesn't make
what?
Age doesn't make a difference in that.
Right, no, again, if the people were older, I would encourage them to get married and go with the IVF. If they were younger, I would encourage them not to get married. But if they were going to get married, then I would give them that advice.
My whole point is some people's emotions are, we'll take what we get. It doesn't make a difference. We're not bothered by this.
We're not bothered by what? You're not bothered by having a kid with Tay Sachs?
No, whether it's logical or not. Some people don't think. Exactly. When they're crazy about each other, they don't think practically.
Right. So again, I would advise them not to get married. Again, you're young still. There's a lot of fish in the sea, etc. However, right? It's very interesting. You know, I remember we had people at our Shabbos table one time, and they were discussing that Nebuch, there was a family that had a Tay Sachs child, and they said it was mamish a miracle. Mamish a miracle. If you don't believe in, this will make you believe in God. Afterwards, the next time, they had triplets, and not one was a carrier. A miracle. Okay. That could have been a miracle. Yeah, you know, Baruch Hashem, there are options nowadays that you can get triplets without any disease. Yeah, thank God. But again, I think in terms of genetic testing for Tay Sachs, one could make a very strong argument that it's halacha you're required to. Other genetic testing at this point where we stand.
The whole IVF thing could be very, I mean, I'm not sure about halacha, but. You can start engineering the perfect child. You know,
so that's what I'm saying. Genetic engineering would seem to be the next step here, which
right.
We'll probably get to eventually.